The first example we're going to go through is the so-called multi-period cash flow problem. Okay, so let me kind of grab the problem first. The problem is this: you look at You look at the problem, you know, in the chapter, and it's a multi-period cash flow problem. And think about the situation, okay? You guys are freshmen, and your families kind of finance your college, and you need to decide how much money put down, and during each period of time, such that, you know, it's sufficient for you, you know, in each semester, for your tuition and for your expenses. So the problem we're going to discuss over here, very much the same. And one of the exercises I ask you to do is exactly to look at your college finance, you know, how your family finance your college, okay? So you go back to the Blackboard, I will post them out this afternoon, okay? Now, let's look at this problem. It's slightly different. We have four different options to put down the money and earn interest. But what we need is to, at the end of the 6 months, we need to get out of $800,000 support a construction project. The cash outflow is in three disbursements. The first one is $250,000. At the end of the month 2, and also month 4, and then the rest of 300 gonna be out at the end of month 6. Okay, so you have requirements end of each of those months. And for our college situation, you know, every semester you have to pay the tuition and fees, and then have expenses and so on. So it's slightly different. Now, the money they put in, you can put the money in four different ways. The short term, every month. So you have, you know, option A1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Each of those is going to be available by the end of that month. You put in the end of the month, it be available, earn 1.8% interest. What's that mean? You put $1 in, by the end of the month, you get $1.08. That's what I mean. And then you have option B. You can put money in the first period, beginning of the month 1, beginning of month 3, beginning of month 5. Okay? The duration is going to be 2 months. By the end of the duration, you earn 3.5% interest. So you put down $1. By the end of the second month, you're going to get $1 and then 3.5 cents. So, that's the meaning. And then the third option is the C. You can put the money down in the beginning of month 1, beginning of month 4, duration 3 months. So by the end of these 3 months, you're going to make 5.8% interest. So you put down $1, you're going to get $1.05 by the end of 3 months. The last one is the 6 month option. So you put down in month 1, by the end of the month 6, you're going to get $1. You put down, you get $1.11. So that's the meaning, okay? And so let's look at how do we put our hands on a problem like this. The first one is the decision variables. How do we define the decision variables in the case? We would define the decision variables for each period. So we got an A1 through A6. Each one is a decision variable. And we define B1, B3, B5, each as a decision variable. And then the C1, C4, and D1. So totally we have this many decision variables to deal with. And then the second one is to figure out the relationships among those decision variables. So that's what we call constraints. So let's look into what we're going to do for the case, okay? The objective function in this case is relatively simple, okay? Because the, you can see the description over here, we want to minimize the total initial money down. So what are the initial money down? The money in the first period, in the second period, in the first period for option A, option B, option C, option D. That's all the money we put down for this case. So we want to minimize A1 plus B1 plus C1 plus D1. That's our objective function. Okay. So let's look into the case first. What I did is to look at the the case in a different way, to look at the time frame in a different way. So I want to show you my handwriting, and then I'm going to switch to the computer, so you can actually match that up. So in case somebody have difficulties for the class, you know, later on can go back to the recording and get a little bit more. Okay. Let's look at the way I define the time frame. Okay. The time frame is defined as month 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and I put B at the beginning of the month, E at the end of the month. And then I put a yellow line there, just indicate that's along that line, so I line them up so you know, if I get multiple rows, you can see where we lined up, okay? And then the end of month 1 is identical to the beginning of month 2. So essentially, I clearly define the time frame for each of these situations, okay? And then I try to interpret the meaning of the information given in the case in that small table, you know? So it's in this way. If I put for A1, we define variable A1, A2, A3, A4 until, you know, D1. So those are the variables we define, okay? Now, if you look at the first wall, A1, we put down $1 A1. By the end of that month, we got $1.08. That's what we got. By the end of the month 1, we got $1.08 for $1. So if we put, for example, A1 is $300, so the total we're going to have is going to be 1.018 times $300. So in this case, we do not know the amount of A1, so we put a variable A1 there. Everybody okay with the logic over here? Corey, okay. So just be sure, everybody, those simple logic is very important, okay? If you understand one or two rules, you understand everything. Now, for the second month, we're going to look at how much money we have to invest and where to invest. Okay? So essentially, if you look at month 2, for example, if you look at month 2, just look at the whole table. In month 2, we do not have any other options. In month 1, we input A1, we put down A1. We also put down B1. B1 mature in 2 months. Okay? And C1 mature in 3 months, and D1 mature in 6 months. So in month 2, however, we do not have any other investment, just A1. Okay? So if you look at the maturity of A1, is 1.018 A1. That's the amount of money we can reinvest. So that becomes A2. Okay? If we put down A2 that amount, by the end of month 2, we're going to get a $1 A2, we're going to get a $1 and 1.8 A2. So if we put down A2 amount, we're going to get this much as total. Is that okay for everybody? You put down $1, you're going to get a 1.8 as interest, but plus your principal of $1. But if you put down A2 amount, that's going to be total amount you're going to have. However, this A2 essentially inherited from this amount. Okay, we talk about that later. Question? Alex? Yeah, okay. So you look at A3, we have the same identical situation, you know, for each case. Anybody, any question about how, you know, each of these investment A, you know, actually get 1.018 of that amount by the end of that month. You okay? Am I right? Everybody comfortable with that? You put $1 down, by the end of the month, you get, you know, 1.8 cents, you know, as interest, but you still have that principal. You know, those amounts are going to be yours to spend. Let's look at B. At beginning of the first period, B1, beginning of the period, okay, the month one, we put down $1 by the end of the second month. You can see the second month, we got a $1 as our principal, plus 3.5 cents interest. So the total amount is going to be $1.35. But if we put down B1 amount, whatever, and we're going to have 1.035 times that amount. Everybody okay with that? And then we can add a C option, okay? So at the beginning of period 1, we put down C1 that amount, okay? By the end of 3 months, we're going to get 1.058 C1. That's the principal plus the interest. Okay, everybody? And then you look at D. The last option is D. D1, we put down at the beginning of month 1. By the end of the month 6, we got 1.11 D1. Any question? Okay, everybody? So that's the way we interpret that table. So give you a concrete sense of what's that really mean for each of these options, okay? And then let's look at the cash outflow, okay? The requirement over here is, by the end of the second month, we need to pay out $250,000. You can see, you know, it's $1,000, so I put $250 there. And by the end of the fourth month, we put out another, you know, $250, and by the end of the 6 months, we finish our, you know, investment for the project, for the construction project. So totally going to be $800,000. And in your case, for the college education, you know, you may have every semester, you know, you have expenses, and even every month you have expenses, and then eventually by the end, that's going to be the total you invest. So whatever the investment you're going to have, put in different categories, so it's going to be sufficient for you to cover the full 4 years. It's clear, everybody? And let's look at what we have here. The objective function over here is to minimize A1 plus B1 plus C1 plus D1. We have 4 different options to invest, and we minimize the total. All the subsequent reinvestments are from the results of the investment in the first period in the 4 categories. Is that okay, guys? You do not have any additional money down in the middle. You only put down in the beginning, okay? And those money, you do not have anything to spend besides these 3 cash outflow, outburst. Okay, so that's the objective function. Let's look at the constraint. Okay, let's look at what happened for the first period. Just look at the first period and look at A1 option. When we put down $1 in month 1, we got $1.018. So the total amount for A1 amount investment going to give us 1.018 A1 at the end of month 1. That amount is going to be the total amount of reinvestment in month 2. That's, you can see I put a dot over there, signifies we put that money there, and then by the end we get 1.018 A1. Okay, everybody? And then, you know, I put down A2 at the beginning of month 2, and that result in 1.018 A2 by the end of month 2. Okay, so you can see you know, this one actually is a dot. Okay, so dots actually they have a special meaning, indicates that amount put down at that time. Okay. In another sense, because in month two at the beginning, we do not have additional cash inflow. Only cash inflow is in month one. We do not have any additional cash inflow in month two. So A2 actually equals 1.0181. Do you follow my logic here? So our first constraint is going to be, you can see, A2 equals 1.0181. You look at this curve over here, the cash inflow we have for month two actually equals the principal and the interest we got from investment in month one from A1. And that's going to be the amount we're going to put down for the reinvestment in month two. Okay? And if we reorganize that equation, I can get A2 minus 1.0181 equals zero. I just moved a variable to the left-hand side as we always do. Or I can use, 1.0181 minus A2. I just multiply negative 1 to the equation equals zero, because zero multiplied negative 1 equals zero. The reason I do that is to make my equation a little bit more uniform. So you're going to see the real reasons in a few minutes. Now, do you understand the logic, how we got to, connect A1 with A2? Let's work on the second one, okay? And then I will ask you to work on the third one. Okay, so pay attention here. In the end of month two, how much money we actually have by then? We're going to have 1.0182, because that's the investment we got from A2 in month one. So we got 1.0882. That's amount available to reinvest. We also available 1.035 B1, because we put down in first period, is available to reinvest. So those two are available. Where those money goes? Those money goes A3, which is going to be the amount reinvest in month three, B3, which again reinvest for 2 months in period three. And then we also have 250 payout for the production, for the construction. Okay? So on one side of the equation, we have available funds 1.01882, 1.035B1 equals the amount on the right hand side of the equation, A3, B3, and 250. Add up those amount. Okay? So let's look at the equation over here. You can see 1.035B1 plus 1.01882 equals A3 plus B3 plus 250. And you can reorganize the equation to move the variables to the left hand side. So we got 1.035B1 plus 1.018A3 minus A3 and minus B3 equals 250. Everybody okay with that? Okay, now, work with your neighbors. Identify the equation for month 4, beginning of month 4. Again, you can see the meaning of my dots. So those each dots make sense, okay? So let's work on B4. Chat freely with your neighbor and work on B4, B5, month 4, month 5, month 6, month 7. So I want all this. Go ahead and get a piece of paper, jack them down, and then we're going to go through those together. Okay? Just go ahead and do that. Okay, now, if you look at month 2, what we did? We look at the cash available in month 2, that's 1.01882, 1.035B1. And then we look at where it goes. A3, B3, and the 250 cash outflow. So let's look at month 4, okay? We got a cash in 1.018A3, 1.058C1. Where the money goes? A4, and C4. So on one side of the equation, we got 1.018A3 plus 1.058C1 equals A4 plus C4. That's it. And let me just talk through this and then I flip to the page so you can see what happened, okay? Because this chart to me is important. And then you look at in month five, the cash in 1.018A4, 1.035B3, that's it, okay? And then cash outflow A5, B5, and 250. So on one side of the equation, you should have 1.1884 plus 1.035B3 equals A5 plus B5 plus 250. Okay? And then let's look at, month 6. The cash inflow over here is 1.1885. You do not have anything else. And then outflow is going to be A6. So on one side of the equation is 1.1885 equals, on another side of the equation, A6. That's it. And then let's look at the last month. The last month we got the cash inflow, 1.1886 plus 1.35B5 plus 1.058C4 plus 1.11D1 equals 300. That's it. Everybody okay with that? So let's look at what we have here. I want to kind of give a chance for my recording. So people later on when you look at it, you know what we're doing. Okay. So I want to kind of flip a page. So you can see the logic we applied is the total amount of maturity at the beginning of that month equals the total amount of reinvested at the beginning of the month plus the cash payout. So you can see the balance of the equation.
What does that say right next to amount?
Amount?
Right.
I refers to I equals
the other side.
Of. It's my off. So you can see the equation we have right now, exactly as I said, for months 1, 2, 3, 4, month 3, you got 1.05 C1 plus 1.018 A3 and equals A4 plus C4. Just compare with yours, see whether or not you got what we had. And especially look at that chart, that should make sense to you now. Okay? Any question, anybody? And then we reorganize those constraints into this form. You can see what we did is to move all the variables from the right-hand side of the equation to the left. Nothing else. So you can see the first equation, 1.018A1 equals A2, essentially equals 1.018A1 minus A2 equals 0. Can you see that, everybody? You see where I got the first equation here? Okay? And then for the second equation, we got A2 is 1.018, and A3 is negative 1, and B1 is 1.035, and B3 is negative 1, equal 250. Again, you just move the variables on the right-hand side back to the left-hand side, and make them to what we call a standardized form, leave only constants on the right-hand side. Okay. And then we finish that up. I can see all the variables should be greater than equal 0. So that's the non-negativity constraint. By doing this, the logic over here becomes the cash inflow available beginning of the month minus the amount of money reinvested in that month should equal the total cash outflow. So how much money we have at the beginning of the month minus the amount to reinvest should equal the cash outflow. So the same logic. You just move around the equation a little bit. Okay? Question. Anybody, any question? You okay with that? Okay. It's not hard, but it's tedious. You should put your attention to the first month, the second month. Be sure you understand that logic. Again, each dollar you put down, you're going to get your principal back plus the interest at the end of the month. And you have to define every month as a decision variable. Okay, so those two things, if you remember, and it will help you a lot. Now, let's look at a complication for the problem. Okay, what happened is we not only look at the amount of investment, we also talk about risk associated with the investment. Okay, so in that case, let me just grab this this page over here. Okay. Now, the risk ratings are provided. You know, investment A got a rating 1, it's a low risk. And B, we got a 3, rating 3. And C, we got 8, very risky. And then D, we got a 6. Okay? Requirement is, it doesn't matter which combination we have, but the weighted average of the weighting, rating for the risk should not be more than 5. So that's given over here. Okay. So you have to limit all the risks within 5. So how do we model that situation? We model that situation in such a way, if you look at the first month, let's look at the first month here. Okay. In the first month, we're going to put down A1, B1, C1, D1. So those are the monies we put down. Now, because we specify the risk for each category given as a rating over here, so we associate the rating with each amount of investment in each option. So that's 1A1 plus 3B1 plus 8C1 plus 6D1 less than equals 5. That's the way we would model this risk. Have any question? Do you understand the logic of what they're doing here? And if you understand this logic over here, that's, again, they define the weighted average risk. Okay? And then, you know, the rest should be a little bit straightforward. We covered how to make this linear. Again, the step is to multiply the equation by the denominator on both sides of the equation. So essentially, you move the denominator to the right-hand side, put them over here within the big parentheses, that is, multiply 5 to each term of those on the right-hand side. Is that correct, everybody? Be sure you follow the logic here, okay? And once you do that, again, one more step is to standardize the equation. That is to move the variables on the right-hand side back to the left-hand side. So essentially, you merge them with the variables on the left-hand side and adjust the coefficient at the beginning. Okay, so let's go through one of them. You know, for example, on the right hand side, we would have 5A1 on the right hand side. Am I right? When you move that 5A1 on the right hand side back to left hand side, combined with this 1A1, we're going to get what? Do we get 6A1 or we get what? Negative how much? 4A1. Okay, guys? So do not dragging down 6A1, because when you move from the right-hand side back to left-hand side, you change the sign, you know. So you got a negative 5A1 on the left-hand side now, combined with 1A1, you got a negative 4A1. And then for for 3b1 minus 5b1, you got a negative 2b1. And then for 8c1 minus 5c1, you got a 3c1. For 6d1 minus 5d1, you got 1d1. Is that correct, everybody? Less than equal 0. So that's the final form. Okay, guys? And then we look at this table again. We look at this table again to confirm, you know, what kind of investment are in month 2. So in month 1, we got, you know, this A1, B1, C1, D1. And in month 2, you know, you look at, we got, you know, A2, we got a B1, we got a C1, we got a D1. Is that correct, everybody? You look at in month 2, what kind of things we hold up, you know. So essentially, that's what we have. And then, you know, you can see that's, you got an A2, B1, C1, D1 in the denominator. And then you adjust the numerator associated with the risk rating. 1A2, 3B1, 8C1, 6D1. Okay? You okay, everybody? I asked you to work out the third one. Okay? So I'm going to put back the month over here, and you work out with your neighbor the month 3, which investment are in month 3 subject to the risk ratings. Okay, month 3, beginning of month 4, we finish this one. We are in this one. Okay, we are in month 3 now, beginning of month 3. So give me the equation for that. What's the denominator going to be? You work out the denominator first. Because numerator, the variables are identical, you just add the associated rating with each variable. Okay? Go ahead. So you got in month 3, you got A3, you get B3, because B1 is already out. There's no risk anymore. But we put a B3 there, so B3 has count the risk, and then C3 still in the portfolio. And then D1. So you got a 4. Okay? So again, you know, A3, B3, C1, D1. So if you look at what we have over here, A3, B3, C1, D1 as a denominator. And then the numerator is going to be associated each with the corresponding risk rating. Okay? So that will make that a little bit straightforward. And then you look at month 4, beginning of month 4, okay, you got a A4 going to be in the portfolio, and then B3 going to be in the portfolio, and then C1 is out, but C4 is in, and then D1, okay? So that's going to be A4, B3, C4, D1. Add them together as a denominator, and again, the numerator will be identical, but you associate the risk rating with each investment. And then we look at month 5. You get beginning of month 5, we got A5 is in, and B3 is out, but B5 is in, and then you get D1 still there, so you got A5, B5, and C4, D1. So the summation of A5 plus B5 plus C4 plus D1 is going to be the denominator. And again, the numerator is going to be identical, but you associate the risk factors with it. Everybody okay with that? Put your time to the first, second equation, understand the logic fully. The rest is going to be repetitions. Okay? And then you look at, you know, the month 6. Month 6 is going to be beginning, you know, you got an A6 in, and B5, and C4, and D1, okay? So that's going to give you the last equation over there. You can see you associate the risk rating with each element, make up your numerator, and less than equals 5. Again, reorganize that, make that look a little bit nicer. So that's the process to reorganize those risk ratings is as this, as I described. You know, you can see the first equation, and you move the denominator to the right hand side, and then move them back, you got this. So that's the equation we got for the first month, and the second month, third month, fourth month, fifth month, last month. Go ahead.
Month 7,
because there's an end. You do not have anything you count risk anymore. See, is that logical? See, beginning of month 7 is end of month 6. You do not have anything actually in month 7. That's just for convenience. It's a good question. Okay. So let's look at the... I want to see what I got here for my recording here. So I just be sure I flip the pages, okay, so people can refer. Yeah, so you can see those are the equations we have, and then we reorganize those to make them kind of standardized. And again, constant should be on the right hand side, and any variables should be on the left hand side. So you take the linear combinations of those. Any question, anybody? It's tedious, but again, everybody approach understand this problem in a different way. Okay, you can see the textbook describe a different way than what I did here. So you're gonna have it your way. Again, sit down and look through, talk through. You'll be okay. Okay, it's not that hard, but it's tedious. So that's this problem. Now we're going to look at the next problem. The next problem is called a production planning problem. So let's put them over here. So let me pause this a little bit. I think I'm okay. Let's look at the next problem. Okay. So the next problem is the production inventory planning problem. And let me get my stuff organized, and let me see what I got here. If you look at the page 85 in the textbook, and you can see this example here, okay? And the example over here is, let me change the projector. Okay, now, if you look at this example here, what we see here is we have a production situation, and you know, we need to plan for the next 6 months. You got a production cost, you got inventory cost. The owner of the business do not want to kind of lay off people and hire people back in every month. So he still want kind of keep the workforce relatively stable, so they have to produce certain amount as a minimum, and they can't produce too much, and they won't have a certain amount in the warehouse, but not too much, because they pay a inventory cost for it. Okay? So all those information provide over here. Now, what's the relevance of a case like this? We have a lot of application of this. It's a planning. Scheduling. You know, if you look at if you work for a consulting firm, for example, you got 5 or 10 people under you, and you got 2 or 3 projects ongoing simultaneously. Each project got a different duration, different kind of costs, and a different revenue associated with it. And you need to schedule how your people are going to work through those. It's very much like this. Okay, so hospital, they have nurses, change shifts, and 911 call centers, you know, each city, they have people staff those telephone stations, receive calls, and they can take off in certain amount of time. For example, if you define every four hours as the only time people can change shifts, and then you need to schedule certain number of people to staff certain number of telephone stations to be sure the whole city is covered. So I actually went to DC, toured their you know, 911 call center. You know, the whole DC area, they got a lot of calls every day. They got 20, 30 people constantly on the telephone, you know, so the whole DC area is divided into 8 regions. You know, you got a police car stationed in certain strategic location, you know, to respond to the emergencies. But anyway, all those can be viewed as a kind of a scheduling problem over here. So the logic over here is going to be, you know, modified a little bit and applicable to those cases. Okay. So let's look at the problem again and see how we approach it. Okay. We want to figure out, the objective over here is to figure out how much we're going to make each month. How many pieces of them are going to be in the warehouse. So you can see those are the production cost, $240 in month one, $250 month two, and so on. And then demand in each month is going to be $1,000, $4,500 month two, $6,000 month three, and so on. And then the maximum production, 4,000 pieces in month one, $3,500 month two, and so on. Now, the minimum production speculated by the owner over here are going to be at least 50% of the maximum production. So let's find out where it is. Okay. So let me move this up a little bit so you can see the minimum amount of production. You know, should be the 50% of the maximum. So let me just quickly go through. The maximum of inventory cannot be more than 6,000. The minimum cannot be less than 1,500. Okay? It's kind of safety stock in case of emergency. And see over here, no less than one half of maximum production, they need to be carried out. So they have to have at least for month one, you know, they have to make at least 2,000 pieces. So that's the then they give the initial inventory $2,750 at the beginning of the month one. Okay. So let's move on to the next. So what we did over here, the first thing we did was to reorganize the information. That's the way I normally do. I put down everything, you know, so I can see concisely what we have. So besides the first three rows, you know, the production cost each piece, $240 for month one, and the unit demand in month one, 1,000 pieces, massive production, 4,000 pieces in month one. I also know the minimum production in month one has to be 2,000 pieces, okay, from the information provided. And I also know the decision variable for me at least is going to be P1, P2, P3, P4, P5, P6. Each piece represents amount of production in that month. Inventory cost. It says it's a 1.5% of the unit production cost. If you look at over here, 1.5% of the entire inventory, you know, 1.5% of the production cost going to be counted as inventory cost. So we got a 240 production cost multiplied by 0.015 give you $3.60. If any piece you made in month one cannot be sold right away, you pay $3.60. Is okay, everybody? Tell me, where this $3.75 is from for month two inventory cost? Where we got it? How do we got $3.75? Everybody? Everybody? Follow what we're saying here? Okay? So so you get Daniel over here says, you know, $2.50 multiplied by 0.015, we got $3.75. Is that okay for you, everybody? So that means if you want to do one more, I can see $3.98 inventory per piece cost in month three equals $2.65 times 0.015. Okay, just be sure you make note, you know where they're from. And then you know 2,000, that's from half of the maximum production, that's the minimum production for P1. Okay, and you do P2, that's you split $3,500, you got $1,750. Okay. And then the inventory. So the decision variable has two categories. Production decision variables, inventory decision variables. So amount of P pieces in the warehouse beginning of month one, that's B1. That's another decision variable. B1, B2, B3, B4, B5, B6, B7. Okay? So we have 13 decision variables. 6 deal with production, 7 deal with inventory, beginning of the month. Okay, guys, everybody? Okay. Now let's move on to the objective function. Okay? The objective over here is to minimize the total cost. So if you look at the total cost in this situation, it has two parts. One is the production cost. The other one is inventory cost. So the production cost essentially equals 240 P1 plus 250 P2 plus 265 P3 plus 285 P4 plus 280 P5 plus 260 P6. It's production cost. How much the inventory cost is going to be? We figure out the inventory cost by how much average inventory we're going to have in the month multiplied by how much per piece in that month. We figure out how much per piece that month by using the 1.5% of the production cost as what we did. So we got a 360 cents, you know, for first month per piece. But the average of the inventory month one is going to be B1 plus B2 divided by 2. Again, we use the average inventory at the beginning of the month, of the 2 months, again, the 2 months as the average inventory for that month. So the average inventory for month two is going to be B2 plus B3 divided by 2. Again, that's 375 equals the amount of production in this case, 250 for month two times 0.015 give you 375. And again, you know, you plus 398 multiplied by B3 plus B4 divided by 2 plus 428 multiplied by B4 plus B5 divided by 2. And then plus 420 multiplied by B5 plus B6 divided by 2. And then the last one is plus 390 multiplied by B6 plus B7 divided by 2. That's the objective function. Is that? A little bit long, but it's not real long because in real applications, it can be longer. Okay, any question, anybody? Now let's get into the formulation for the constraints. Remember what we said first. We said, you know, the total production has to be within 4,000 pieces and 2,000 pieces. You can be lower than 2,000, cannot be more than 4,000, because the owner wants to stabilize the workforce, right? So that logic actually produces the following constraints for the decision variables of production. So you got a production one, you know, the number of pieces made in period one or month one is between 2,000 and 4,000 pieces. And month two, month three, month four, and so on, we just put them in between the lower and the upper limits. And be careful over here. The upper limit was established, clearly given in the table, but the lower limit is 50% of the upper limits. That's where you derive this, based on the information given. You okay, everybody? Comfortable with that? Again, figure out one or two rows, you know, clearly, and then you'll be okay. Okay? Yeah. I'm just kind of flip one page for this recording so I can continue my talk. Okay, now, if you look at the logic we have over here, essentially is the ending inventory equals the beginning inventory plus the number of pieces produced minus the number of pieces we sold. So you can see the ending inventory equals the beginning inventory, that's BI, plus production in that month minus the demand units sold is defined as a demand given. Okay, so we can easily model the production in this kind of situation. And then that will give us the equations like this, okay? If you look at the first month, based on the requirement, based on the requirement, we have so the beginning inventory in month one plus the production in month one minus 1,000 pieces, that's the demand given in the table, should be in between 1,500 and 6,000. Again, 1,500, that's the minimum safety stock that the owner want to keep, and 6,000, that's the maximum. Can be more than that. Okay. Question. Can you tell me the second one? What's the second equation? So if you have this table over here, give me the second equation. You know the first equation. Give me the second equation. Okay. What's the second equation? Everybody. So essentially you got a B2 plus P2 minus 4,500, so B in B2M, 1,500 and 6,000. Is that correct, everybody? Go ahead.
Where do you get the 6,000? I see like the 1,500, but I don't see the 6,000.
Yep. See, if you look at the 1,500 is given over here, and then 6,000 is over here. Very important. Go back and forth of the problem multiple times, and when I do it, I normally just spread out, you know, all the pieces on the table. So you can see I actually did this multiple times, and some of my notes actually cut and pasted, you know. So okay. So from that sense, you're gonna get the rest of the equation for the production. You can B2 plus P2, you know, the inventory beginning of the second period plus the production in the second period minus 4,500 as a demand, so be in between 1,500 and 6,000. Beginning inventory month 3 plus production in month 3 minus the demand in month 3, which is 6,000 pieces, so be between 1,500 and 6,000. And month 4, month 5, month 6. Again, those demand figure that's given in the table as part of the information provided, see, in the table. Okay? So it's a good idea to lay them out on the table, spread them out, and then you know, go through piece by piece. That guarantee you won't miss anything. Okay? The beginning of inventory in 1 month equals ending inventory of the previous month. Okay, just be sure you understand the teeny tiny distinction between those two. Okay, they are actually identical. Month one, by the end of the month one, that's exactly the number of pieces you're going to have at the beginning of month two. Is that correct, everybody? So just be sure you understand that. Okay. So from that logic, we would have beginning of inventory month 2, the beginning inventory month 2 equals beginning inventory month 1 plus production in month 1 minus demand in month 1. Okay. And if I modify this equation a little bit, put all the variables to the left-hand side, keep the right-hand side constant, and I want to keep the right-hand side positive, okay? So I can do this. B2 minus B1 equals minus P1. I just move the variable to the left. Give me negative 1,000. So I multiply negative 1 on both sides. So you can see I got a negative B2 plus B1 plus P1 equals positive 1,000. Okay. So, if you look at the rest, again, those demand figures are from the table given. Okay. So you can see beginning inventory month 3 equals B2, the beginning inventory month 2 plus production in month 2 minus 4,500, which is the demand in month 2 is given. And you can manipulate that, make them in the form like this, okay? So you do that for beginning inventory 4, 5, 6, and 7. So that finishes up the discussions over here. And again, the production variable and the inventory variable should be greater than or equal to 0. So that's the last equation we have. Question? Everybody? Any question? Okay with that? What I did next is to reorganize the whole thing. As I always did, I try to conform to one model such that, you know, we did that before, and with a minimum effort, we implement that in the Excel. So that's my intention over here, and hopefully this effort can achieve that, okay? So you can see, let me flip this through also. You're gonna want more a little bit. Okay, now if you look at this page over here, we define the decision variables totally. We got 13 of them, 6 production decision variables, and 7 inventory decision variables associated with corresponding cost objective function coefficient. We got a 240 for the production cost for month 1. And 1.8 for B1 and 3.675 for B2. Again, those numbers are from the corresponding numbers derived from the equation. Okay, and then we look at the constraint over here. So again, each of those will be placed in B2 in the lower and upper bounds provided in the problem. Now see over here, the equations, that's the interesting part, okay? I want to draw your attention over here, where we got those. Let's look at this first piece. If you look at the first piece, P1 is greater than or equals 2,000, less than or equals 4,500. Look at this. Okay? How can we convert P1 plus P1 minus 1,000 for month 1 greater than equals 1,500 less than 6,000 into a standardized form? How do we do it? We have to do that twice. Okay? What are we going to do? We look at the lower bound first. Forget this part. Totally forget this part. Look at this part. Okay? First, what are we going to do? We move B1 plus B2 to the left-hand side. We move this to the right-hand side, as we normally do. So that gives us B1, negative B1, minus B2, less than equals negative 1,500 minus 1,000. So essentially, on the right-hand side, you've got a negative 2,500. Is that correct? You follow what I'm doing here? These two becomes negative on the left-hand side, and then 1,500 becomes negative on the right-hand side. So that's why on one side I got a negative B1 plus P1 less than equals negative 2,500. Okay? I do not like negative 2,500 as constant. So I multiply negative 1 on both sides. I got a positive P1 plus positive B1 plus P1 greater than equals 2,500. Go ahead, Dylan.
Could you just add 1,000 over there?
If you move this to the right, to the left hand side, equally good. That's essentially better. So essentially, you do nothing but use, because this 1,000 is negative. You move to the right-hand side, it becomes positive, you got 2,500. B1 plus P1 greater than equals 2500. That's the first equation. Everybody convinced with that? You okay with that? Okay, so let's look at what I got here. The first one, that's exactly P1 plus B1 greater than 2500. Okay, and you do that for every one of them. You do that for every one of them. For this one, you move this 4500 to the right hand side, you get a 6000. Okay, so that gives you the second one, 6000. Okay. You move the third one is 6,000, you move to the right hand side. The third one, you move to the right hand side, you can see the third one, you get, you know, 6,000, move to the right hand side, you get 7,500. That's how you get this 7,500, okay? And then the first one, you got a 5,500 over to the left hand side, you get a 7,000, okay? So that's how you get those lower limits. Now let's work on the upper limits. For the upper limit, the inventory month one plus production month one, you move this to the right hand side. Okay? So 6,000 minus plus 6,000 plus 1,000 get 7,000. Is that correct? So essentially B1 plus P1 less than equals 7,000 for month one for the upper bound. Look at here. Greater than equals 2,500 in month one, less than equals 7,000 in month one. That match up, that single equation. Okay? And then you do the same for the second month, third month, fourth month, fifth month, and that will give you the rest of the equations. So you can see give you why you do where the 10,500 come from. Anybody? Where the 10,500 come from for the for the month two? You got a 4,500 negative in the middle. Move to the right hand side. You got a 10,500. Okay. The next one is 12,000. Where 12,000 from? 6,000 negative. Move to the right hand side, add them up to 6,000, you got 12,000. Okay? And then the next one, 5,500, add to this 6,000, you get this 11,500. Okay? Everybody okay? Correct? So that gives you, you know, those equations, and then you can see that we finish up by this. And then we look at where we got this from here, you know, those equals, where we got those equals, okay? So let's look at the first one we got. It's tedious, but it's not impossible. So look at, you know, B2 equal B1 plus P1 minus 1,000. So the simple way will be move this 1,000 to the other side, move B2 to the left, to the right hand side, you know, so equals B1 plus P1 minus B2 equal 1,000. Okay, so if you look at the equation for that, is 1,000 on one side, production in first month plus inventory in first month minus inventory in the second month, that's exactly this first equation. Okay, go ahead and work out the second one now. Go ahead and work with your neighbor for the second piece. Okay. For the second month, go ahead. Why in the second month we got, you know, we got over here. So let's look at what we got here. Second month we got, you know, 4,500. Where we got 4,500? Over this case, you can see we move 4,500 negative to the left hand side, okay? Becomes positive. And then we move this beginning inventory in month 3 to the right hand side, so we got a B2 plus P2 plus B3 equals 4,500. So you can see that's the that's why we got 4,500. Okay? And then you work on the next month. For the next month, we got B3 plus P3 minus B4 equals 6,000. So that's what you get for 6,000, you can see. So, and then you do the same thing for the rest. Everybody okay with that? Okay? So that's the formulation for this. And then when you finish those, you should get pretty much, you know, the whole thing, you know. The last one is the non-negativity constraint. Now, once you finish, the beauty of that is you set up your Excel in such a way, you put your objective function equation over here, use equal sum product, okay? And you highlight these coefficients, and the address on top of it refers to the amount of variables, amount of, you know, you're going to get for those decision variables. That gives you objective function value. But be sure, lock the amount for the decision variables. And then you just copy, paste over to the rest. That's it. And then you solve the problem. But along the way, you have to provide the lower and upper bounds for these few decision variables. That's it. Okay? If you do not want to do that, you may also split this into, you know, six for lower limit, six for upper limits. You got 12 more, you know, 12 more lines like what we did here, that'd be okay. So you can do the same thing, you know, copy and paste them over and work out your answers. Question? You okay, guys? That give us, you know, the production inventory case. Let me post this.